Just set on that engine pillow and says, let Albert come and get her. Why, he says, I'll take that squirt and wring him out like a pair of drawers. The cat crept close between the men again, and its tail lay flat and its whiskers jerked now and then. The sun dropped low toward the horizon, and the dusty air was red and golden. The cat reached out a gray, questioning paw and touched Joad's coat. He looked around. Hell, I forgot the turtle. I ain't gonna pack it all over hell. He unwrapped the land turtle and pushed it under the house. But in a moment it was out, headed southwest as it had been from the first. The cat leaped at it and struck at its straining head and slashed at its moving feet. The old, hard, humorous head was pulled in, and the thick tail slapped in under the shell. And when the cat grew tired of waiting for it and walked off, the turtle headed on southwest again. Young Tom Joad and the preacher watched the turtle go, waving its legs and boosting its heavy, high-domed shell along toward the southwest. The cat crept along behind for a while, but in a dozen yards it arched its back to a strong, taut bow and yawned, and came stealthily back toward the seated men. "Where the hell you suppose he's going?" said Joad. "I seen turtles all my life. They're always going someplace. They always seem to want to get there." The gray cat seated itself between and behind them again. It blinked slowly. The skin over its shoulders jerked forward under a flea and then slipped slowly back. The cat lifted a paw and inspected it, flicked its claws out and in again experimentally, and licked its pads with a shell-pink tongue. The red sun touched the horizon and spread out like a jellyfish, and the sky above it seemed much brighter and more alive than it had been. Joad unrolled his new yellow shoes from his coat, and he brushed his dusty feet with his hand before he slipped them on. The preacher, staring off across the field, said,
"Somebody's coming. Look, down there, right through the cotton."
Joad looked where Casey's finger pointed. "Coming afoot," he said. "Can't see him for the dust he raises. Who the hell's coming here?" They watched the figure approaching in the evening light, and the dust it raised was reddened by the setting sun. "Man," said Joad. The man drew closer, and as he walked past the barn, Joad said, "Why, I know him. You know him. That's Muley Graves." And he called, "Hey, Muley, how are you?" The approaching man stopped, startled by the call, and then he came on quickly. He was a lean man, rather short. His movements were jerky and quick. He carried a gunny sack in his hand. His blue jeans were pale at knee and seat, and he wore an old black suit coat, stained and spotted, the sleeves torn loose from the shoulders and back, and ragged holes worn through at the elbows. His black hat was as stained as his coat, and the band, torn half free, flopped up and down as he walked. Muley's face was smooth and unwrinkled, but it wore the truculent look of a bad child's, the mouth held tight and small, the little eyes half scowling, half petulant. "You remember Muley," Joad said softly to the preacher.
"Who's that?"
the advancing man called. Joad did not answer. Muley came close. Very close, before he made out the faces.
"Well, I'll be damned," he said. "It's Tommy Joad. When'd you get out, Tommy?"
2 days ago," said Joad. "Took a little time to hitchhike home. And look here what I find. Where's my folks, Muley? What's the house all smashed up for and cotton planted in the dooryard?
By God, it's lucky I come by," said Muley.
"'Cause old Tom worried himself. When they was fixin' to move, I was settin' in the kitchen there. I just told Tom I wasn't gonna move, by God. I told him that, and Tom says, 'I'm worryin' myself about Tommy. Suppose he comes home, and they ain't nobody here. What'll he think?' I says, 'Why don't you write down a letter?' And Tom says, 'Maybe I will. I'll think about her. But if I don't, you keep your eye out for Tommy if you're still around. I'll be around, I says. I'll be around till hell freezes over. There ain't nobody can run a guy named a Graves out of this country, and they ain't done it, neither.
Joad said impatiently, where are my folks? Tell about you standing up to them later, but where's my folks?
Well, they was gonna stick her out when the bank come to tractoring off the place. Your grandpa stood out here with a rifle, and he blowed the headlights off that cat, but she come on just the same. Your grandpa didn't want to kill the guy driving that cat, and that was Willie Feely, and Willie knowed it, so he just come on and bumped the hell out of the house and give her a shake like a dog shakes a rat. Well, it took something out of Tom, kind of got into him. He ain't been the same ever since.
Where is my folks? Joad spoke angrily.
What I'm telling you. Took 3 trips with your Uncle John's wagon. Took the stove and the pump and the beds. You should have seen them beds go out with all them kids and your grandma and grandpa setting up against the headboard. Your brother Noah sitting there smoking a cigarette and spitting la-di-da over the side of the wagon.
Joad opened his mouth to speak.
They're all at your Uncle John's, Muley said quickly.
Oh, all at John's. What they doing there?
Now, stick to her for a second, Muley. Just stick to her. Just a minute, you can go on your own way. What they doing there?
Well, they've been chopping cotton, all of them, even the kids and your grandpa, getting money together so they can shove on west. Gonna buy a car and shove on west where it's easy living. There ain't nothing here. 50 cents a clean acre for chopping cotton, and folks begging for the chance to chop.
And they ain't gone yet?
Nope, said Muley. Not that I know. Last I heard was 4 days ago when I seen your brother Noah out shooting jackrabbits.
And he says they're aiming to go in about 2 weeks. John got his notice. He got to get off. You just go on about 8 miles to John's place. You'll find your folks piled in John's house like gophers in a winter burrow.
Okay, said Joad. Now you can ride on your own way. You ain't changed a bit, Muley. If you want to tell about something off northwest, you point your nose straight southeast.
Muley said truculently, you ain't changed neither. You was a smart aleck kid and you're still a smart aleck. You ain't telling me how to skin my life by any chance.
Joad grinned. No, I ain't. If you want to drive your head into a pile of broken glass, there ain't nobody can tell you different. You know this here preacher, don't you, Muley? Reverend Casey.
Why, sure. Sure, didn't look over. Remember him well.
Casey stood up and the two shook hands.
Glad to see you again, said Muley. You ain't been around for a hell of a long time.
I've been off asking questions, said Casey. What happened here? Why are they kicking folks off the land?
Muley's mouth snapped shut so tightly that a little parrot's beak in the middle of his upper lip stuck down over his underlip. He scowled.
Them sons of bitches, he said. Them dirty sons of bitches. I tell you, man, I'm staying. They ain't getting rid of me. If they throw me off, I'll come back. And if they figure I'll be quiet underground, well, I'll take couples 3 of the sons of bitches along for company.
He patted a heavy weight in his side coat pocket.
I ain't a-going. My pa come here 50 years ago, and I ain't a-going.
Joad said, what's the idea of kicking the folks off?
Oh, they talk pretty about it. You know what kind of years we've been having. Dust coming up and spoiling everything so a man didn't get enough crop to plug up an ant's ass. And everybody got bills at the grocery. You know how it is. Well, the folks that owns the land says we can't afford to keep no tenants. And they says the share a tenant gets is just the margin of profit we can't afford to lose. And they says if we put all our land in one piece, we can just barely make her pay. So they tractored all the tenants off of the land. All except me. And by God, I ain't going, Tommy. You know me. You knowed me all your life.
Damn right, said Joad. All my life.
Well, you know I ain't a fool. I know this land ain't much good. Never was much good except for grazing. Never should have broke her up. And now she's cotton damn near to death. If only they didn't tell me I got to get off. Why, I'd probably be in California right now, eating grapes and a-picking an orange when I want it. But them sons of bitches say I got to get off. And Jesus Christ, a man can't when he's told to.
Sure, said Joad. I wonder Pa went so easy. I wonder Grandpa didn't kill nobody. Nobody never told Grandpa where to put his feet. And Ma ain't nobody you can push around neither. I seen her beat the hell out of a tin peddler with a live chicken one time because he give her an argument. She had the chicken in one hand and the axe in the other, about to cut its head off. She aimed to go for that peddler with the axe, but she forgot which hand was which. She takes after him with the chicken. Couldn't even eat that chicken when she got done. There wasn't nothing but a pair of legs in her hand. Grandpa throwed his hip out of joint laughing. How'd my folks go so easy? Well, the guy that come around talked nice, says Pie. You got to get off. It ain't my fault. Well, I says, whose fault is it? I'll go and I'll nut the fella. It's a Shawnee Land and Cattle Company. I just got orders. Well, who's a Shawnee Land and Cattle Company? It ain't nobody. It's a company. Got a fella crazy. There wasn't nobody you could lay for. A lot of the folks just got tired out looking for something to be mad at. But not me. I'm mad at all of it. I'm staying. A large red drop of sun lingered on the horizon and then dripped over and was gone. And the sky was brilliant over the spot where it had gone. And a torn cloud, like a bloody rag, hung over the spot of its going. And dusk crept over the sky from the eastern horizon, and darkness crept over the land from the east. The evening star flashed and glittered in the dusk. The gray cat sneaked away toward the open barn shed and passed inside like a shadow. Jode said, "Well, we ain't gonna walk no 8 miles to Uncle John's place tonight. My dogs is burned up. How's it if we go to your place, Muley? That's only about 1 mile." "Won't do no good." Muley seemed embarrassed. "My wife and kids and her brother and all took and went to California. They wasn't nothing to eat. They wasn't as mad as me, so they went. They wasn't nothing to eat here." The preacher stirred nervously.
"You should have went, too. You shouldn't have broke up the family."
"I couldn't," said Muley Graves. "Something just wouldn't let me."
"Well, by God, I'm hungry," said Jode. 4 solemn years I've been eating right on the minute. My guts is yelling bloody murder. What you gonna eat, Muley? How you been getting your dinner?" Muley said ashamedly, "For a while I ate frogs and squirrels and prairie dogs sometimes. Had to do it. But now I got some wire nooses on the tracks and the dry stream brush. Get rabbits and sometimes a prairie chicken. Skunks get caught and coons, too."
He reached down, picked up his sack, and emptied it on the porch. 2 cottontails and a jackrabbit fell out and rolled over limply, soft and furry.
"God Almighty," said Jode, "it's more'n 4 years since I've et fresh-killed meat."
Casey picked up one of the cottontails and held it in his hand.
"You sharin' with us, Muley Graves?" he asked.
Muley fidgeted in embarrassment. "I ain't got no choice in the matter."
He stopped on the ungracious sound of his words.
"That ain't like I mean it. That ain't, I mean," he stumbled. "What I mean, if a fella's got something to eat and another fella's hungry, why, the first fella ain't got no choice. I mean, suppose I pick up my rabbits and go off somewheres and eat 'em. See?"
"I see," said Casey. "I can see that. Muley sees something there, Tom. Muley's got a hold of something, and it's too big for him, and it's too big for me."
Young Tom rubbed his hands together.
"Who got a knife? Let's get at these here miserable rodents. Let's get at 'em."
Muley reached in his pants pocket and produced a large horn-handled pocket knife. Tom Joe took it from him, opened a blade, and smelled it. He drove the blade again and again into the ground and smelled it again, wiped it on his trouser leg, and felt the edge with his thumb. Muley took a quart bottle of water out of his hip pocket and set it on the porch.
"Go easy on that there water," he said. "That's all there is here wells filled in."
Tom took up a rabbit in his hand.
"One of you go get some bale wire out of the barn.
We'll make a fire with some of this broken plank from the house. He looked at the dead rabbit. There ain't nothing so easy to get ready as a rabbit, he said. He lifted the skin of the back, slit it, put his fingers in the hole, and tore the skin off. It slipped off like a stocking, slipped off the body to the neck, and off the legs to the paws. Jode picked up the knife again and cut off head and feet. He laid the skin down, slit the rabbit along the ribs, shook out the intestines onto the skin, and then threw the mess off into the cotton field. And the clean, muscled little body was ready. Jode cut off the legs and cut the meaty back into two pieces. He was picking up the second rabbit when Casey came back with a snarl of bale wire in his hand. "Now build up a fire and put some steaks up," said Jode. "Jesus Christ, I'm hungry for these here creatures." He cleaned and cut up the rest of the rabbits and strung them on the wire. Muley and Casey tore splintered boards from the wrecked house corner and started a fire, and they drove a stake into the ground on each side to hold the wire. Muley came back to Jode.
"Look out for boils on that jackrabbit," he said. "I don't like to eat no jackrabbit with boils."
He took a little cloth bag from his pocket and put it on the porch. Jode said,
"The jack was clean as a whistle. Jesus God, you got salt too? By any chance you got some plates and a tent in your pocket?"
He poured salt in his hand and sprinkled it over the pieces of rabbit strung on the wire. The fire leaped and threw shadows on the house, and the dry wood crackled and snapped. The sky was almost dark now, and the stars were out sharply. The gray cat came out of the barn shed and trotted, meowing, toward the fire, but nearly there it turned and went directly to one of the little piles of rabbit entrails on the ground. It chewed and swallowed, and the entrails hung from its mouth. Casey sat on the ground beside the fire, feeding it broken pieces of board, pushing the long boards in as the flame ate off their ends. The evening bats flashed into the firelight and out again. The cat crouched back and licked its lips and washed its face and whiskers. Jode held up his rabbit-laden wire between his two hands and walked to the fire. "Here, take one end, Muley. Wrap your end around that stake. That's good now. Let's tighten her up. We ought to wait till the fire's burned down, but I can't wait." He made the wire taut, then found a stick and slipped the pieces of meat along the wire until they were over the fire, and the flames licked up around the meat and hardened and glazed the surfaces. Jode sat down by the fire, but with his stick he moved and turned the rabbit so that it would not become sealed to the wire.
"This here is a party," he said. "Salt Muley's got, and water and rabbits. I wish he got a pot of hominy in his pocket. That's all I wish."
Muley said over the fire,
"You fellas think I'm touched, the way I live?"
"Touched? Nothing," said Jode. "If you're touched, I wished everybody was touched."
Muley continued,
"Well, sir, it's a funny thing. Something went and happened to me when they told me I had to get off the place. First I was going to go in and kill a whole flock of people. Then all my folks all went away out west. And I got wandering around, just walking around, never went far. Slept where I was. I was going to sleep here tonight. That's why I come. I tell myself, I'm looking after things, so when all the folks come back, it'll be all right. But I know that wasn't true. There ain't nothing to look after. Folks ain't never coming back. I'm just wandering around like a damn old graveyard ghost."
"Fellow gets used to a place. It's hard to go," said Casey. "Fella gets used to a way of thinking. It's hard to leave. I ain't a preacher no more, but all the time I find I'm praying, not even thinking what I'm doing."
Jode turned the pieces of meat over on the wire. The juice was dripping now, and every drop as it fell in the fire shot up a spurt of flame. The smooth surface of the meat was crinkling up and turning a faint brown.
"Smell her," said Jode. "Jesus, look down and just smell her."
Muley went on,
"Like a damn old graveyard ghost. I've been going around the places where stuff happened. Like there's a place over by our 40. In a gully, there's a bush. First time I ever laid with a girl was there. me 14 and stamping and jerking and snorting like a buck deer, randy as a billy goat. So I went there and I laid down on the ground and I seen it all happen again. And there was a place down by the barn where Pa got gored to death by a bull. And his blood is right in that ground right now. Must be. Nobody ever washed it out. And I put my hand on that ground where my own Pa's blood is part of it. He paused uneasily. You fellas think I'm touched? Joe turned the meat, and his eyes were inward. Casey, feet drawn up, stared into the fire. 15 feet back from the men, the fed cat was sitting, the long gray tail wrapped neatly around the front feet. A big owl shrieked as it went overhead, and the firelight showed its white underside and the spread of its wings.
No, said Casey. You're lonely, but you ain't touched.
Muley's tight little face was rigid. I put my hand right on the ground where that blood is still, and I seen my Pa with a hole through his chest. And I felt him shiver up against me like he done, and I seen him kind of settle back and reach with his hands and his feet, and I seen his eyes all milky with hurt. And then he was still, and his eyes so clear, looking up, and me a little kid sitting there, not crying or nothing, just sitting there. He shook his head sharply. Joe turned the meat over and over. And I went in a room where Joe was born. Bed wasn't there, but it was a room. And all them things is true. And they're right in the place that happened. Joe come to life right there. He give a big old gasp, and then he let out a squawk you could hear a mile. And his grandma standing there says, that's a daisy, over and over. And her so proud she bust 3 cups that night. Joe cleared his throat. Think we better eat her now. Let her get good and done. Good and brown, almost black, said Muley irritably. I want to talk. I ain't talk to nobody. If I'm touched, I'm touched, and that's the end of it. Like an old graveyard ghost going to neighbors' houses in the night. Peters, Jacobs, Rance's, Jode's. And the house is all dark, standing like miserable, ratty boxes. But they was good parties and dancing. And there was meetings and shouting glory. They was weddings all in them houses. And then I'd want to go in town and kill folks. Because what'd they take when they tracted the folks off the land? What'd they get so their margin of profit was safe? They got Pa dying on the ground, and Joe yelling his first breath, and me jerking like a billy goat under a bush in the night. What'd they get? God knows the land ain't no good. Nobody been able to make a crop for years, but them sons of bitches at their desks, they just chop folks in two for their margin of profit. They just cut them in two. Place where folks live is them folks. They ain't whole, out lonely on the road in a piled-up car. They ain't alive no more. Them sons of bitches killed them. And he was silent, his thin lips still moving, his chest still panting. He sat and looked down at his hands in the firelight. I ain't talked to nobody for a long time, he apologized softly. I've been sneaking around like an old graveyard ghost. Casey pushed the long boards into the fire, and the flames licked up around them and leaped up toward the meat again. The house cracked loudly as the cooler night air contracted the wood. Casey said quietly,
I gotta see them folks that's gone out on the road. I got a feeling I got to see them. They're gonna need help. No preaching can give 'em. Hope of heaven when their lives ain't lived. Holy Spirit, when their own spirit is downcast and sad, they gonna need help. They got to live before they can afford to die.
Jode cried nervously, Jesus Christ, let's eat this meat for it's smaller than a cooked mouse. Look at her. Smell her. He leaped to his feet and slid the pieces of meat along the wire until they were clear of the fire. He took Muley's knife and sawed through a piece of meat until it was free of the wire. Here's for the preacher, he said.
I told you, I ain't no preacher.
Well, here's for the man, then. He cut off another piece. Here, Muley,
if you ain't too goddamn upset to eat. This here's Jackrabbit, tougher than a bull bitch. He sat back and clamped his long teeth on the meat and tore out a great bite and chewed it. Jesus Christ, hear her crunch. And he tore out another bite ravenously. Muley still sat regarding his meat.
Maybe I oughtn't to talk like that, he said. Fella should maybe keep stuff like that in his head.
Casey looked over, his mouth full of rabbit. He chewed, and his muscled throat convulsed in swallowing.
Yes, you should talk, he said. Sometimes a sad man can talk the sadness right out through his mouth. Sometimes a killing man can talk the murder right out of his mouth and not do no murder. You done right. Don't you kill nobody if you can help it.
And he bit out another hunk of rabbit. Joe tossed the bones in the fire and jumped up and cut more off the wire. Muley was eating slowly now, and his nervous little eyes went from one to the other of his companions. Joe ate scowling like an animal, and a ring of grease formed around his mouth. For a long time, Muley looked at him, almost timidly. He put down the hand that held the meat.
Tommy, he said.
Joe looked up and did not stop gnawing the meat.
Yeah,
he said around a mouthful.
Tommy, you ain't mad with me talking about killing people. You ain't huffy, Tom.
No, said Tom. I ain't huffy. It's just something that happened.
Everybody know it was no fault of yours, said Muley. Old man Turnbull said he was going to get you when you come out. Says nobody can kill one of his boys. All the folks hereabout talked him out of it, though.
We was drunk, Jode said softly. Drunk at a dance. I don't know how she started. And then I felt that knife go in me, and that sobered me up. First thing I see is Herb coming for me again with his knife. There was this here shovel leaning against the schoolhouse, so I grabbed it and smacked him over the head. I never had nothing against Herb. He was a nice fella. Come a bullin' after my sister Rosa Sharn when he was a little fella. No, I liked Herb.
Well, everybody told his pa that, and finally cooled him down. Somebody says there's Hatfield blood on his mother's side and old Turnbull, and he's got to live up to it. I don't know about that. Him and his folks went on to California 6 months ago.
Joe took the last of the rabbit from the wire and passed it around. He settled back and ate more slowly now, chewed evenly, and wiped the grease from his mouth with his sleeve. And his eyes, dark and half-closed, brooded as he looked into the dying fire.
Everybody's going west, he said. I got me a parole to keep. Can't leave the state.
Parole? Muley asked. I heard about them. How do they work?
Well, I got out early, 3 years early. There's stuff I gotta do or they send me back in. Gotta report ever so often.
How they treat you there in McAllister? My woman's cousin was in McAllister and they give him hell.
It ain't so bad, said Jode. Like every place else. They give you hell if you raise hell. You get along okay unless some guard gets it in for you. Then you catch plenty hell. I got along okay, minded my own business like any guy would. I learned to write nice as hell. Birds and stuff like that, too, not just word writing. My old man'll be sore when he sees me whip out a bird in one stroke. Pa's gonna be mad when he sees me do that. He don't like no fancy stuff like that. He don't even like word writing. Kinda scares him, I guess. Every time Pa seen writing, somebody took something away from him.
They didn't give you no beatings or nothing like that?
No. I just tended my own affairs. Of course, you get goddamn good and sick of doing the same thing day after day for 4 years. If you done something you was ashamed of, you might think about that. But hell, if I seen Herb Turnbull coming for me with a knife right now, I'd squash him down with a shovel again.
"Anybody would," said Muley.
The preacher stared into the fire, and his high forehead was white in the settling dark. The flash of little flames picked out the cords of his neck. His hands, clasped about his knees, were busy pulling knuckles. Joe threw the last bones into the fire and licked his fingers and then wiped them on his pants. He stood up and brought the bottle of water from the porch, took a sparing drink, and passed the bottle before he sat down again. He went on.
The thing that gave me the most trouble was it didn't make no sense. You don't look for no sense when lightning kills a cow or comes up a flood. That's just the way things is. But when a bunch of men take and lock you up 4 years, it ought to have some meaning. Men is supposed to think things out. Here they put me in and keep me and feed me 4 years. That ought to either make me so I won't do her again or else punish me so I'll be afraid to do her again. He paused. But if Herb or anybody else come for me, I'd do her again. Do her before I could figure her out. Especially if I was drunk. That sort of senselessness kind of worries a man.
Muley observed. Judge says he gave you a light sentence 'cause it wasn't all your fault.
Jode said, "He's a guy in McAllister, lifer. He studies all the time. He's secretary of the warden. Writes the warden's letters and stuff like that. Well, he's one hell of a bright guy. Reads law and all stuff like that. Well, I talked to him one time about her, 'cause he reads so much stuff. And he says it don't do no good to read books. Says he's read everything about prisons now and in the old times. And he says she makes less sense to him now than she did before he starts reading. He says it's a thing they started way to hell and gone back. Nobody seems to be able to stop her. Nobody got sense enough to change her. He says for God's sake don't read about her, because he says for one thing you'll just get messed up worse. And for another, you won't have no respect for the guys that work the governments."
"I ain't got a hell of a lot of respect for him now," said Muley. "Only kind of government we got that leans on us fellas is a safe margin of profit. There's one thing that's got me stumped, and that's Willie Feely, driving that cat. Gonna be a straw boss on land his own folks used to farm. That worries me. I can see how a fella might come from some other place and not know no better, but Willie belongs. Worried me so, I went up to him and asked him. Right off, he got mad. 'I got two little kids,' he says. 'I got a wife, and my wife's mother. Them people got to eat.' Gets madder than hell. 'First and only thing I got to think about is my own folks,' he says. 'What happens to other folks is their lookout,' he says. Seems like he's shamed, so he gets mad."
Jim Casey had been staring at the dying fire, and his eyes had grown wider, and his neck muscles stood higher. Suddenly he cried,
"I got her! If ever a man got a dose of the spirit, I got her! Got her all of a flash!"
He jumped to his feet and paced back and forth, his head swinging.
"Had a tent one time. Drawed as much as 500 people every night. That's before either you fellas seen me."
He stopped and faced them.
"Ever notice I never took no collections when I was preaching out here to folks, in barns and in the open?"
"By God, you never," said Muley. "People around here got so used to not giving you money, they got to be a little mad when some other preacher come along and pass the hat. Yes, sir."
"I took something to eat," said Casey. "I took a pair of pants when mine was wore out, and an old pair of shoes when I was walking through to the ground. But it wasn't like when I had the tent. Some days there I'd take in $10 or $20. Wasn't happy that-a-way, so I'd give her up. And for a time I was happy. I think I got her now. I don't know if I can say her. I guess I won't try to say her. But maybe there's a place for a preacher. Maybe I can preach again. Folks out lonely on the road. Folks with no land, no home to go to. They got to have some kind of home. Maybe..."
He stood over the fire. The 100 muscles of his neck stood out in high relief, and the firelight went deep into his eyes and ignited red embers. He stood and looked at the fire, his face tense as though he were listening, and the hands that had been active to pick, to handle, to throw ideas grew quiet, and in a moment crept into his pockets. The bats flittered in and out of the dull firelight, and the soft, watery burble of a nighthawk came from across the fields. Tom reached quietly into his pocket and brought out his tobacco, and he rolled a cigarette slowly and looked over it at the coals while he worked. He ignored the whole speech of the preacher, as though it were some private thing that should not be inspected. He said, "Night after night in my bunk, I figured how she'd be when I come home again. I figured maybe Grandpa or Grandma'd be dead, and maybe there'd be some new kids. Maybe Pa'd not be so tough. Maybe Ma'd set back a little and let Rosa Sharn do the work. I knowed it wouldn't be the same as it was. Well, we'll sleep here, I guess, and come daylight we'll get on to Uncle John's. Leastwise, I will. You think you're coming along, Casey?" The preacher stood slowly, looking into the coals. He said slowly,
"Yeah, I'm going with you. And when your folks start out on the road, I'm going with them. And where folks are on the road, I'm going to be with them."
"You're welcome," said Joad. "Ma always favored you, said you was a preacher to trust. Rosa Sharn wasn't growed up then." He turned his head. "Muley, you gonna walk on over with us?" Muley was looking toward the road over which they had come. "Think you'll come along, Muley?" Joad repeated.
"Huh? No, I don't go no place. And I don't leave no place. See that glow over there, jerking up and down? That's probably the superintendent of the stretch of cotton. Somebody maybe seen our fire."
Tom looked. The glow of light was nearing over the hill.
"We ain't doing no harm," he said. "We'll just set here. We ain't doing nothing."
Muley cackled.
"Yeah, we're doing something, just being here. We're trespassing. We can't stay. They've been trying to catch me for 2 months.
Now you look, if that's a car coming, we go out in the cotton and lay down. Don't have to go far. Then by God, let them try to find us. Have to look up and down every row. Just keep your head down."
Joad demanded, "What's come over you, Muley? You wasn't never no running hide fella. You was mean." Muley watched the approaching lights.
"Yeah," he said. I was mean like a wolf. Now I'm mean like a weasel. When you're hunting something, you're a hunter and you're strong. Can't nobody beat a hunter. But when you get hunted, that's different. Something happens to you. You ain't strong. Maybe you're fierce, but you ain't strong. I've been hunted now for a long time. I ain't a hunter no more. I'd maybe shoot a fella in the dark, but I don't maul nobody with a fence stake no more. It don't do no good to fool you or me. That's how it is."
"Well, you go out and hide," said Joad. "Leave me and Casey tell these bastards a few things." The beam of light was closer now, and it bounced into the sky and then disappeared, and then bounced up again. All three men watched.
Muley said, "There's one more thing about being hunted. You get to thinking about all the dangerous things. If you're hunting, you don't think about 'em, and you ain't scared. Like you says to me, if you get in any trouble, they'll send you back to McAllister to finish your time."
"That's right," said Joad. "That's what they told me. But sitting here resting or sleeping on the ground, that ain't getting in no trouble. That ain't doing nothing wrong. That ain't like getting drunk or raising hell."
Muley laughed. "You'll see. You'll just sit here and a car'll come. Maybe it's Willie Feely. And Will is a deputy sheriff now. What you doing trespassing here?" Willie says. "Well, you always did know Willie was full of crap, so you says, 'What's it to you?' Willie gets mad and says, 'You get off or I'll take you in, and you ain't gonna let no Feely push you around, 'cause he's mad and scared. He's made a bluff, and he got to go on with it. And here's you getting tough, and you got to go through.' Oh, hell.
It's a lot easier to lay out in the cotton and let them look. More fun, too, because they're mad and can't do nothing. And you're out there laughing at them. But you just talk to Willie or any boss, and you slug hell out of them, and they'll take you in and run you back to McAllister for 3 years.
You're talking sense, said Jode. Every word you said is sense. But Jesus, I hate to get pushed around. I'd lots rather take a sock at Willie.
He got a gun, said Muley. He'll use it, because he's a deputy. Then he either got to kill you, or you got to get his gun away and kill him. Come on, Tommy. You can easy tell yourself you're fooling him, lying out like that. And it all just amounts to what you tell yourself.
The strong lights angled up into the sky now, and the even drone of a motor could be heard.
Come on, Tommy. Don't have to go far. Just 14, 15 rows over, and we can watch what they do.
Tom got to his feet. By God, you're right, he said. I ain't got a thing in the world to win, no matter how it comes out.
Come on, then, over this way.
Muley moved around the house and out into the cotton fields about 50 yards.
This is good, he said. Now, lay down. You only got to pull your head down if they start the spotlight going. It's kind of fun.
The three men stretched out at full length and propped themselves on their elbows. Muley sprang up and ran toward the house, and in a few moments he came back and threw a bundle of coats and shoes down.
They'd have taken them along just to get even, he said.
The lights topped the rise and bore down on the house. Jode asked, won't they come out here with flashlights and look around for us? I wished I had a stick.
Muley giggled, no, they won't. I told you I'm mean like a weasel. Willie done that one night and I clipped him from behind with a fence stake. Knocked him colder than a wedge. He told later how 5 guys come at him.
The car drew up to the house and a spotlight snapped on.
Duck,
said Muley. The bar of cold white light swung over their heads and crisscrossed the field. The hiding men could not see any movement, but they heard a car door slam and they heard voices.
Scared to get in the light?
Muley whispered.
Once, twice, I've took a shot at the headlights. That keeps Willie careful. He got somebody with him tonight.
They heard footsteps on wood, and then from inside the house they saw the glow of a flashlight.
Shall I shoot through the house?
Muley whispered.
They couldn't see where it come from. Give him something to think about.
Sure, go ahead, said Jode.
Don't do it, Casey whispered. It won't do no good, just a waste. We got to keep thinking about doing stuff that means something.
A scratching sound came from near the house.
Putting out the fire, Muley whispered. Kicking dust over it.
The car door slammed, the headlights swung around, and faced the road again.
Now, duck, said Muley.
They dropped their heads, and the spotlight swept over them and crossed and recrossed the cotton field. And then the car started and slipped away, and topped the rise and disappeared.
Muley sat up. Willie always tries that last flash. He done it so often I can time him, and he still thinks it's cute.
Casey said,
maybe they'd left some fellas at the house. They'd catch us when we come back.
Maybe. You fellas, wait here. I know this game.
He walked quietly away, and only a slight crunching of clods could be heard from his passage. The two waiting men tried to hear him, but he had gone. In a moment, he called back from the house.
They didn't leave nobody. Come on back.
Casey and Jode struggled up and walked back toward the black bulk of the house. Muley met them near the smoking dust pile which had been their fire.
I didn't think they'd leave nobody, he said proudly. Me knocking Willie over, taking a shot at the lights once, twice, keeps them careful. They ain't sure who it is, and I ain't gonna let them catch me. I don't sleep near no house. If you fellas want to come along, I'll show you where to sleep, where there ain't nobody going to stumble over you.
Lead off, said Jode. We'll follow you. I never thought I'd be hiding out on my old man's place. Muley set off across the fields, and Jode and Casey followed him. They kicked the cotton plants as they went.
You'll be hiding from lots of stuff, said Muley.
They marched in single file across the fields. They came to a water cut and slid easily down to the bottom of it.
By God, I bet I know, cried Jode. Is it a cave in the bank?
That's right. How'd you know?
I dug her, said Joad. Me and my brother Noah dug her. Looking for gold, we says we was. But we was just digging caves like kids always does. The walls of the water cut were above their heads now. Ought to be pretty close, said Joad. Seems to me I remember her pretty close. Muley said, I've covered her with brush. Nobody couldn't find her. The bottom of the gulch leveled off and the footing was sand. Joad settled himself on the clean sand. I ain't gonna sleep in no cave, he said. I'm gonna sleep right here. He rolled his coat and put it under his head. Muley pulled at the covering brush and crawled into his cave. I like it in here, he called. I feel like nobody can come at me. Jim Casey sat down on the sand beside Joad. Get some sleep, said Joad. We'll start for Uncle John's at daybreak.
I ain't sleeping, said Casey. I got too much to puzzle with.
He drew up his feet and clasped his legs. He threw back his head and looked at the sharp stars. Joad yawned and brought one hand back under his head. They were silent, and gradually the skittering life of the ground, of holes and burrows, of the brush began again. The gophers moved, and the rabbits crept to green things. The mice scampered over clods, and the winged hunters moved soundlessly overhead. Chapter 7. In the towns, on the edges of the towns, in fields and vacant lots, the used car yards, the wreckers' yards, the garages with blazing signs, used cars, good used cars, cheap transportation, three trailers, 27 Ford, clean, checked cars, guaranteed cars, free radio, car with 100 gallons of gas, free. Come in and look. Used cars, no overhead. A lot and a house large enough for a desk and a chair and a blue book. Sheaf of contracts, dog-eared, held with paper clips, and a neat pile of unused contracts. Pen, keep it full, keep it working. A sale's been lost 'cause a pen didn't work. Those sons of bitches over there ain't buying. Every yard gets 'em. They're lookers. Spend all their time looking. Don't want to buy no cars. Take up your time. Don't give a damn for your time. Over there. Them two people. No, with the kids. Get 'em in a car. Start 'em at 200 and work down. They look good for 1 1/4. Get 'em rolling. Get 'em out in a jalopy. Sock it to 'em. They took our time. Owners with rolled-up sleeves, salesmen, neat, deadly, small, intent eyes watching for weaknesses. Watch the woman's face. If the woman likes it, we can screw the old man. Start him on that cad. Then he can work him down to that 26 Buick. If you start on the Buick, they'll go for a Ford. Roll up your sleeves and get to work. This ain't gonna last forever. Show him that Nash while I get the slow leak pumped up on that 25 Dodge. I'll give you a Hymie when I'm ready. What you want is transportation, ain't it? No baloney for you. Sure, the upholstery is shot. Seat cushions ain't turning no wheels over. Cars lined up, noses forward, rusty noses, flat tires, parked close together. Like to get in to see that one? Sure, no trouble. I'll pull her out of the line. Get 'em under obligation. Make 'em take up your time. Don't let 'em forget they're taking your time. People are nice, mostly. They hate to put you out. Make 'em put you out, and then sock it to 'em. Cars lined up, Model T's high and snotty, creaking wheel, worn bands, Buicks, Nashes, DeSotos. Yes, sir, 22 Dodge, best goddamn car Dodge ever made. Never wear out. Low compression. High compression got lots of sap for a while, but the metal ain't made that'll hold it for long. Plymouths, Rockneys, Stars. Jesus, where'd that Apperson come from? The Ark? And a Chalmers and a Chandler ain't made 'em for years. We ain't selling cars, rolling junk. God damn it, I got to get jalopies. I don't want nothing for more'n 25-30 bucks. Sell 'em for 50-75. That's a good profit. Christ, what cut do you make on a new car? Get jalopies. I can sell 'em fast as I get 'em.
Nothing over 250. Jim, corral that old bastard on the sidewalk. Don't know his ass from a hole in the ground. Try him on that Apperson. Say, where is that Apperson? Sold? If we don't get some jalopies, we got nothing to sell. Flags, red and white, white and blue all along the curb. Used cars. Good used cars. Today's bargain. Up on the platform. Never sell it. Makes folks come in, though. If we sold that bargain at that price, we'd hardly make a dime. Tell them it's just sold. Take out that yard battery before you make delivery. Put in that dumb cell. Christ, what they want for 6 bits. Roll up your sleeves. Pitch in. This ain't gonna last. If I had enough jalopies, I'd retire in 6 months. Listen, Jim, I heard that Chevy's rear end. Sounds like busting bottles. Squirt in a couple quarts of sawdust. Put some in the gears, too. We gotta move that lemon for $35. Bastard cheated me on that one. I offer 10 and he jerks me to 15, and then the son of a bitch took the tools out. God almighty, I wished I had 500 jalopies. This ain't gonna last. He don't like the tires. Tell him they got 10,000 in them. Knock off a buck and a half. Piles of rusty ruins against the fence. Rows of wrecks in back, fenders, grease-black wrecks, blocks lying on the ground and a pigweed growing up through the cylinders. Brake rods, exhausts, piled like snakes, grease, gasoline. See if you can't find a spark plug that ain't cracked. Christ, if I had 50 trailers at under 100, I'd clean up. What the hell is he kicking about? We sell him, but we don't push him home for him. That's good. Don't push him home. Get that one in the monthly, I bet. You don't think he's a prospect? Well, kick him out. We got too much to do to bother with a guy that can't make up his mind. Take the right front tire off the Graham. Turn that mended side down. Rest looks swell. Got tread and everything. Sure, there's 50,000 in that old heap yet. Keep plenty of oil in. So long. Good luck. Looking for a car? What'd you have in mind? See anything attracts you? I'm dry. How about a little snort of good stuff? Come on, while your wife's looking at that LaSalle. You don't want no LaSalle Baron shot. Uses too much oil. Got a Lincoln 24. There's a car. Run forever. Make her into a truck. Hot sun on rusted metal. Oil on the ground. People are wandering in, bewildered, needing a car. Wipe your feet. Don't lean on that car. It's dirty. How do you buy a car? What does it cost? Watch the children now. I wonder how much for this one. We'll ask. It don't cost money to ask. We can ask, can't we? Can't pay a nickel over 75, or there won't be enough to get to California. God, if I could only get 100 jalopies. I don't care if they run or not. Tires, used, bruised tires, stacked in tall cylinders. Tubes, red, gray, hanging like sausages. Tire patch, radiator cleaner, spark intensifier. Drop this little pill in your gas tank and get 10 extra miles to the gallon. Just paint it on. You got a new surface for 50 cents. Wipers, fan belts, gaskets. Maybe it's the valve. Get a new valve stem. What can you lose for a nickel? All right, Joe. You soften them up and shoot them in here. I'll close them. I'll deal them or I'll kill them. Don't send in no bums. I want deals. Yes, sir. Step in. You got to buy there. Yes, sir. At 80 bucks, you got to buy. I can't go no higher than 50. The fella outside says 50. 50? 50? He's nuts. Paid $78.50 for that little number. Joe, you crazy fool. You trying to bust us? Have to can that guy. I might take 60. Now look here, mister. I ain't got all day. I'm a businessman, but I ain't out to stick nobody. Got anything to trade?
Got a pair of mules I'll trade.
Mules? Hey, Joe, hear this? This guy wants to trade mules. Didn't nobody tell you this is the machine age? They don't use mules for nothing but glue no more.
Fine big mules, 5 and 7 years old. Maybe we better look around.
Look around? You come in when we're busy and take up our time and then walk out? Joe, did you know you was talking to pikers?
I ain't a piker.
I got to get a car. We're going to California. I got to get a car.
Well, I'm a sucker. Joe says I'm a sucker. Says if I don't quit giving my shirt away, I'll starve to death. Tell you what I'll do. I can get $5 apiece for them mules for dog feed. I wouldn't want them to go for dog feed. Well, maybe I can get 10 or 7, maybe. Tell you what we'll do. We'll take your meals for 20. Wagon goes with them, don't it? And you put up 50, and you can sign a contract to send the rest at $10 a month.
But you said 80.
Didn't you never hear about carrying charges and insurance? That just boosts her a little. You'll get her all paid up in 4 or 5 months. Sign your name right here. We'll take care of everything.
Well, I don't know.
Now, look here. I'm giving you my shirt, and you took all this time. I might have made 3 sales while I've been talking to you. I'm disgusted. Yeah, sign right there.
All right, sir.
Joe, fill up the tank for this gentleman. We'll give him gas.
Jesus, Joe, that was a hot one.
What'd we give for that jalopy? $30? 35, wasn't it? I got that team, and if I can't get 75 for that team, I ain't a businessman. And I got 50 cash and a contract for 40 more. Oh, I know they're not all honest, but it'll surprise you how many kick through with the rest. One guy come through with 100 2 years after I wrote him off. I bet you this guy sends the money.
Christ, if I could only get 500 jalopies. Roll up your sleeves, Joe. Go out and soften them and send them in to me. You get 20 on that last deal. You ain't doing bad.
Limp flags in the afternoon sun. Today's bargain, 29 Ford pickup, runs good. What do you want for 50 bucks, a Zephyr? Horsehair curling out of seat cushions, fenders battered and hammered back, bumpers torn loose and hanging, fancy Ford Roadster with little colored lights at fender guide, at radiator cap and 3 behind, mud aprons and a big die on the gear shift lever. Pretty girl on tire cover, painted in color and named Cora. Afternoon sun on the dusty windshields.
Christ, I ain't had time to go out and eat. Joe, send a kid for a hamburger.
Spattering roar of ancient engines.
There's a dumb bunny looking at that Chrysler. Find out if he got any jack in his jeans. Some of these farm boys is sneaky. Soften them up and roll them into me, Joe. You're doing good.
Sure, we sold it. Guarantee.
We guaranteed it to be an automobile. We didn't guarantee to wet nurse it.
Now listen here, you bought a car, and now you're squawking. I don't give a damn if you don't make payments. We ain't got your paper. We turn that over to the finance company. They'll get after you, not us. We don't hold no paper.
Yeah?
Well, you just get tough, and I'll call a cop.
No, we did not switch the tires. Run him out of here, Joe. He bought a car, and now he ain't satisfied.
How'd you think if I bought a steak and ate half and try to bring it back? We're running a business, not a charity ward.
Can you imagine that guy, Joe?
Say, look at there. Got an elk's tooth. Run over there. Let him glance over that 36 Pontiac.
Yeah.
Square noses, round noses, rusty noses, shovel noses, and the long curves of streamlines, and the flat surfaces before streamlining.
Bargains today.
Old monsters with deep upholstery. You can cut her into a truck easy. Two-wheel trailers, axles rusty in the hard afternoon sun.
Used cars, good used cars, clean, runs good. Don't pump oil.
Christ, look at her. Somebody took nice care of her. Cadillacs, LaSalles, Buicks, Plymouths, Packards, Chevys, Fords, Pontiacs. Row on row, headlights glinting in the afternoon sun. Good used cars.
Soften them up, Joe.
Jesus, I wish I had 1,000 jalopies. Get them ready to deal and I'll close them.
Going to California?
Here's just what you need.
Look shot, but they's thousands of miles in her.
Lined up side by side. Good used cars. Bargains. Clean.
Runs good.
Chapter 8. The sky grayed among the stars, and the pale late quarter moon was insubstantial and thin. Tom Joad and the preacher walked quickly along a road that was only wheel tracks and beaten caterpillar tracks through a cotton field. Only the unbalanced sky showed the approach of dawn, no horizon to the west, and a line to the east. The two men walked in silence and smelled the dust their feet kicked into the air.
"I hope you're dead sure of the way," Jim Casey said. "I'd hate to have the dawn come and us be way to hell and gone somewhere."
The cotton fields scurried with waking life, the quick flutter of morning birds feeding on the ground, the scamper over the clods of disturbed rabbits, the quiet thudding of the men's feet in the dust, the squeak of crushed clods under their shoes sounded against the secret noises of the dawn. Tom said, "I could shut my eyes and walk right there. Only way I can go wrong is think